Okay, this is Blind Cool Tech, number 22, June 20th, 2005. We have a special guest from Thailand with us today. And would you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about your trip here? And
yes, my name is Viraman Niyompho, and I'm originally from Thailand. I study at Overbrook School for the Blind in Philadelphia and worked at Overbrook School for the Blind as a computer instructor for many years, but now I'm back in Thailand. It has been about 9 years. I'm here on a short 2-week visit in the States, and I just thought I would like to come and visit American Printing House for the Blind. So I'm here today with Larry
and Rob, and it was funny that Rob, you knew Rob from Overbrook School or from university?
From university.
Yeah.
That's right. Years ago.
Westchester University, Pennsylvania. We were friends.
And Rob was just telling us that you taught him, what was it, and logical or over
That's
dinner?
Right. One. Yeah.
That's too
right.
funny.
That was the first time I really got it.
And we used to have pizza together.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Oh, Rob is a good piano player, too.
Yes, he is.
I would get him to play the piano in the basement, and I would sing some popular songs back in those days. I forget the songs now.
He'll sing them in Thai, though. I didn't know what he was singing about.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I even taught Rob a Thai song. And we performed.
We did.
Once. It was great.
That is too funny.
Right.
So you were telling us you're having some trouble with some book ports, huh? You had 2 out of 3 that are bad?
That's right. But the device is really interesting, and it has a lot of good use when I first got it. You know, I like transferring files into the machine,
yeah.
Both, you know, MP3 songs and information files, you know, text files and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, just be able to navigate and search for information that I have. That's really nice. So it's all accessible. And it's small enough to carry around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Right. But out of the three that I have right now in Thailand, 2 of them are not working, and it seems like it's you know, pretty serious hardware problem, probably. Like, you know, I would reset, it doesn't work. I would change the battery, it doesn't work. I would take out the flash card, it doesn't work.
Did you try putting the card in from the one that does work into the one that doesn't?
Yes, I tried
that
too.
Did that?
Too,
okay.
Right.
Uh-huh. Are they less than a year old? They might still be under warranty.
There might be, right.
That probably would be a good idea, is to just send them back to us if you could.
I could just ship them over here,
yeah.
And just get it replaced or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or repaired.
Right.
That's unusual for, uh-huh. It's about 2 out of 3, that's very unusual.
This is one case where 2 out of 3 is bad.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right. But it must be just an unlucky 2 out of 3 that went to Thailand or something.
I guess
but,
so.
But I'm sure you don't have that many problems.
Maybe there's a humidity problem that we don't know about or something.
That might be true. Right. But I'm in Thailand working as a lecturer and a researcher at university in Thailand. It's called Ratchasudar College. It's a college that is dedicated toward the work for the disabled.
Hmm.
And there's a section on for the deaf, section for the blind, and it hasn't expanded to other disabilities yet. But there's also a general section working on rehabilitation work. So there are educational programs ranging from, you know, bachelor degrees to master degrees. But for the blind, we've set up ourselves pretty much to be like a support center for blind students who are studying in universities, because we don't feel that blind people have to come to one college.
Yeah.
Right, they can integrate, right? So we act as a support center for materials and stuff.
Okay.
And I do my research work. This is the part that I really enjoy, is software development research. And my focus is more on Braille translation. I've done some speech work. I mean, I didn't do the speech engine, but I sort of got the speech engine that somebody else developed. And it's kind of added on as a module for JAWS.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
So basically, you have to run JAWS first, and that would work in English. And you run this a Thai language module that we have. Then on top of that, it will be able to speak Thai when it sees Thai characters.
Wow. Excellent.
Yes.
Great.
So there's a lot of research work going on besides my work in that area, in speech area. So it has gone pretty well.
And I understand you wrote a Braille translation system for the Thai language as
Right. Braille translation system is something that I developed when I was at Overbrook, actually. You know, as a teacher and as a bachelor degree science in computer science, back then, I saw Duxbury, and I thought, well, okay, if it can work for English, I would like to try it for Thai language. So I did some research work to figure out about the font of Thai language and Thai ASCII codes and all that stuff, and then Thai translation rules, and then developed the software. And it was a DOS software back then when I was at Overbrook. Now, when I went back to Thailand, I got it upgraded under another research project. So we now have a Thai Braille translation software under Windows system.
Cool.
Yeah. And it has been helping Braille producers in Thailand a lot, producing materials and stuff. And with the work that I'm doing, additional to that is regional work in Southeast Asia, which is under the name ONNET. ONNET stands for Overbrook Nippon Network on Educational Technology.
Interesting.
It's funded by the Nippon Foundation from Japan, and Overbrook also is involved. It's sort of like the main administrator of the fund. So it runs out of Overbrook. It's under ONNET's project. And I'm the regional coordinator in Thailand. And the region really covers about 8 countries. There's Thailand, Malaysia, Philippines, Indonesia, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, and Myanmar, or formerly it used to be called Burma. You probably don't know some of these countries, but they are all in the region of Southeast Asia. So I'm the regional coordinator for ONNET. So I work with Mr. Larry Campbell quite closely on the project. And we've done several things, but one thing that I've done with my programmer is expanded our Braille translation research work to 2 other languages. So we now have a Khmer Braille translation software. That's for Cambodia, by the way. Their language is called Khmer, K-H-M-E-R. And we also expanded it to Laos Braille translation software. So it's another version for Laos. That's also another country nearby. So under our control, we got 3 languages right now.
Nice.
Thai, Khmer, and Laos.
Great.
You know, we can improve on all 3 of them to a certain level, and we are working on that still.
But now, are the Braille production facilities, is it adequate to meet the needs of the blind people in that area?
Well, in some countries there are, like in Thailand, first of all, once the Braille translation software is developed, we sort of imitated computer Braille, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So it in a way is sort of faking the Braille printers to Braille what we need in our languages. So The embossers are still imported. I mean, we get enabling technologies in Braille embossers like Juliet Bookmakers, Express, mm-hmm. or whatever. And we still get, you know, we get index Braille printers. But these printers don't have to know about these languages. The translator would convert what we need into computer Braille file and then send it to the Braille printer.
Okay.
And they just bang it out. But
yeah.
You know, it became what we need.
And like, do you use 8-dot Braille?
No, we use 6-dot Braille.
Okay.
Right. Like, for example, the first character in Thai is .1245.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called Gokai. That's what we call it. But if we need to send that Gokai to the Braille printer, the translator converts it to a G.
Right.
Because it uses the same dots. So I send a G to the Braille printer, and you know, the Braille printer doesn't care.
Right. You gotta do what you gotta do.
That's right.
Great.
So it's basically a translator changing, you know, local languages, printed text into computer Braille files using U.S. computer Braille standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. That's
cool.
The way.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of government support is there for blind people in Thailand in particular?
For Thai people, for blind people in Thailand, there are supports in different levels. But not as much as over here, definitely. There's special education. There's education department which has special education section, and they have set up special education centers throughout the country. They try to set up central material distribution center,
mm-hmm.
But that's supposed to serve all types of disabilities, so blind people are included there.
And now that's for equipment or Braille books?
That's more for equipment.
Okay.
For Braille books, it is being done in different levels, but it's still not meeting the demand as much as we would like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are organizations making Braille books for the blind, and there are organizations that are putting Braille books on the web even, so that people can download it.
Mm-hmm.
But see, we don't have good Thai scanning system like you
I
guys.
I was just going to ask you about
right.
that.
So the process of making things into Braille would be actually typing still.
Yeah.
So we got to, you know, get people, volunteers, or even pay people to type stuff into the files, and then we use the Braille translation software to convert it. But to have really good formatted Braille, you know, it's not just put it through the translator and that's it. I mean, you got to know about how to format the file before translation.
Sure.
And if you really want good quality, then you have to go through proofreading afterwards, too.
Yeah,
and we are into the stage of using Braille displays as well. But some printing house would just Braille out the whole book once and just have blind people go through it and make notes of it or compare it with sighted co-workers and you know, go back and change the Braille files again. But I think we are all at this computerized Braille production technology, not printing press. I think we've gone away from this huge printing press thing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we just use Braille printers, and if we need high speed, then we just get high speed, like you know, the end of the line, the top of the line. What is that? The TET 600. There are a couple of them in Thailand, but there are many, you know, bookmakers and Juliets and those printers.
Now, do the Thai students, do they also read English?
They study English, they read English, but it's not the official language. Mm-hmm. Thai is the official language.
So all their textbooks are in Thai.
Right, right. Most of it, most of the books are in Thai. That's why we needed Thai speech access,
yeah,
and we needed Thai Braille translation
and
system
Thai
going.
And Thai OCR would be nice too.
Yeah, that would be the next research that I'm looking forward to see. I probably won't get into it. It's really too much over my expertise.
Yeah.
Even with speech research that I got involved in, I didn't really develop the speech synthesizer. I mean, I think it's something that somebody else with more knowledge that could develop, and they could develop it for the whole society too. I mean, you could take a Thai speech engine and use it for other applications.
Sure.
And of course, you know, we'll take that and use it for us, for the blind too.
So does the average speech user in Thailand understand that there are OCR programs in other countries that do scan their native languages into computerized form?
Yes, they
so
do.
So it's really just a matter of time and money to get it done, really. Everybody understands.
To get in Thai language, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, that's right. You know, sometimes we use OCR, English OCR, to help with material production, to take care of English books.
Yeah.
And sometimes we even just use commercial OCR software like OmniPage,
mm-hmm,
right,
and other things instead of getting OpenBook or Kurzweil. Those would be more specialized for the blind who are really into studying in English and using English a lot.
Right.
They might want specialized software like OpenBook and Kurzweil. But for material production, we just get the OmniPage and scan it, and I think it gives pretty good quality.
Yeah.
And you know, I even tried using JAWS with OmniPage, and I think it was okay too.
Hmm.
Oh yeah, a lot of people do that.
Oh yeah, that's what I do too. In fact.
Right. So it really depends on, you know, how.
Customized.
How customized you want, and how well you can handle the computers and JAWS and stuff, and you really get into, you know, commercial applications.
Well, in fact, with the newer versions, OmniPage, my favorite way to use it is to, for PDFs now, you know, if you get a protected PDF file, or if it won't export to text, now you can right-click on it, and there's a context menu item, convert to text, and
mm-hmm,
it'll actually perform the OCR on that PDF file, which is really cool.
Yeah, I want to ask about PDF files. I mean, is it really possible to just get it into accessible text, or convert it to text nicely and fully, or it is not 100%? I mean, I heard different stories, and sometimes I just go into a PDF file and I just press enter, and I have Adobe there. It comes up to me, and I get something, but I'm never sure if I got everything.
I'm with you. I'm the same way. I hear all this ranting and raving about how good it is, but I've had mixed success with it too.
Right.
Which is another reason I like to do the OCR on it, because then you just let the OCR engine do it just like it's paper.
Oh.
So you know you're getting... Mm-hmm. At least what it can see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And there are a lot of PDF files out on the web
now. There are, oh yeah.
I mean, it looks nice, but it's difficult for the blind to access.
Very much so. In fact, we hate PDF. I think most blind people probably do. So is there any... the publishers in Thailand, do you have any provisions with them where they will supply you with files so that you don't have to have somebody type all these textbooks in for the students?
Well, that's something that is a good idea, and we did try to work on that, but it gets into different issues. I think that's a copyright issue, of course. That's the same issue everywhere. Or just the companies afraid that, you know, once you get their electronic stuff, then they won't be able to sell the books, the printed books and stuff like that. There's no law right now to enforce cooperation or enforce publishers to work together with blind community, but some publishers are willing to cooperate, but the problem is they are not organized enough. They would say, yeah, we might have files, but good luck on doing whatever you can with it, because it might have been in different formats or whatever.
Exactly.
Because their goal is really to get something looking good on the print set, right? To print it out. So they won't care, and they didn't care about making it accessible for the blind. So yeah, we got files, but it was it would be difficult to convert it to good accessible text format. And sometimes the workers would even have to compare it with the print book anyway, and it might have taken more time than just typing it.
Mm-hmm. We run into that same thing here, actually. How are blind people integrated into the society in Thailand? Is it pretty? Do people have the rights to?
The rights, rights to education, the right to vote. I think it's being more recognized now. Disability in general, and the blind is always the more outspoken group. I mean, they have a joke here, like in meetings of cross disabilities, right? There's the blind, the deaf, the people on wheelchair and stuff, and people with mental disability, then the parents would have to speak out for them. But the blind would be talking so much, and the wheelchair people would just be walking out. Then they don't even know there's only one or two people in the room. They'll be talking.
I think that's very similar to how it is here.
And that's like, cross-community work.
Yeah.
But there is a national organization is Thailand Association of the Blind, TAB. There's a very, very strong leader who is there right now. He came to the States. His name is Mun Tien Bun Tan. And he came to the States. He studied here only for 5 years, but he went back. His English is really good, even better than my English. And he got involved with NFB, and he got that NFB blood in him. I mean, he's in Thailand. He is a great advocate for the Thais. I mean, Thai people are shocked at what he's trying to do.
All right.
I mean,
excellent.
I'm not even as, as strong as he is. I mean, I try to get into, technology and services and stuff, but if it's something to do with advocacy, just leave it to him. He'll take care of it.
Well, it's nice to have somebody like that on your side.
yes, it's nice. So, people have opportunity to get education. I think there are good technologies available right now for Thai language. I think we could be more organized on material production to get, Braille books going quickly and on time for the students. But employment is really not progressing as much as I was hoping for. How you guys have people working in customer service, using computers, and being programmers, being all what you want to be, just majoring in any field that you like to a certain extent, and then pursuing your careers in different in those things that you study in, whether it's law, physics, or social work or teaching or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is not being opened up as much as we would like it to be. I mean, college majors, I think we are limited to certain majors. And then the question is, the question of getting a job after that is also a tough thing
implement. Is that a prejudice on the employer's part, you think, primarily?
I wouldn't call it prejudice, but it's really something, I would call ignorance more than prejudice.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I would say that just not realizing how much disabled people can do, or, you know, the capability of a blind person, qualified blind persons, of course. And it is something that we are pushing for, and at the same time we have to you know, make sure ourselves we are well trained. But it hasn't worked out that well. There are people working in different areas. I mean, I'm a professor. I would say I'm a professor yet, because I don't have a PhD. I'm a lecturer at a university. There are blind law professors in other universities. There are blind teachers in different schools, but it's mostly school for the blind, and telephone operators, a lot of that, and people that sell lottery tickets. Because in Thailand, it's not like you go to the store and you tell what number you want. It's the paper tickets,
okay,
big pack, and you just pick out the ticket with the numbers that you want. So blind people would be, you know, taking these lottery tickets and go around and walk around and be in the shopping malls and sell the lottery tickets. Yeah, that's a very good occupation for the blind over there. But it is changing. I mean, I think in the future, blind people are going to have to get more technology training to get more into the office work somehow. Because, you know, online lottery is coming up. It's still mixed between paper ticket and, you know, this machine at the store. And maybe someday the paper tickets will be all gone, then blind people will be out of jobs. And of course, there are musicians, there are beggars and stuff too.
So you'd say there's not really any actual practicing attorneys that are blind?
Practicing attorney, no. People that study law, there are a couple of them working in the law firm, but they are more like transcriptionists.
Okay.
Yeah, law case transcriptionists. You know, the lawyers would go, sighted lawyers would go to the court case and they would get the recordings of things. They'll bring it back to this blind guy who has a law degree, and he would be transcribing things.
What a waste.
Yeah. And there's a, you know, I have a friend who is a really good, well, not a lawyer, but he got a law degree. He got a very good grade. He couldn't find a job, so he ended up being an operator. And he was an operator for many years, so I think he gave up on his idea of being some kind of, you know, law, in law profession now. So things like that. Musicians, yes, there are musicians, you know, having the bands or trying to talk, trying to sing in different nightclubs and stuff. But it's not really something that people are given good opportunities. You know, there's, if you look at popular singers in the country, you know, there's no blind popular singers in the country. It's nothing like having Stevie Wonder or you know, some of the people here in America.
Yeah.
So I think employment is something we need to work on more, and diverse, you know, different opportunities of employment. But I think my part, I would really like to get into some kind of customer service training program using technologies, using computers.
So do you have a strategy to try to make that kind of thing happen?
I have not really spent much time thinking about it because right now I'm doing too many things. But I think when I have more time, I would set up some kind of training. I'm not looking for anything big. I might get maybe 5, no more than 10 qualified blind people with good braille skill, with good mobility skill, independent living and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Maybe with a bachelor degree of any particular degree, maybe some level of English, and get them going through this training course. But I really want to go visit the job sites first.
Sure.
And to see what is needed and try to get employers to be aware of the project.
That's the big thing there.
And, I don't want to train people and then say, hey, let's go look for a job. I think if it's something that is cooperative from beginning, and if I can show them I can train blind people to be good customer service workers, if I can prove that to you, would you take them from, if that's something could be agreed from beginning, I think it would be better.
Sure.
And I don't know, I haven't got into that yet, but hopefully I will. There are a lot of call centers in Thailand right now. It's really booming. People are working there.
Like for the international market, you mean?
Well, airlines, banks, hotels, even telephone companies, mobile phones are really hit over there.
Yeah.
You can hardly go around without a person without a mobile phone unless you go out in the country, in the farm or something.
Mm.
But it's crazy. but there are call centers for these mobile phone companies. Yeah. But I think it's really just a transition from a regular telephone operator to a more high-tech operator. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And blind people, if they can get into those positions, they still be taking calls, right? So they can get information from the customers. That's an input, so they don't have to worry about reading papers and stuff. And they just need to work with the computers, have good access to the computer, and good skills to search for things and get information from that computer screen to answer the customers. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if that can be set up in Thailand, I think it will really help open up a lot of job opportunities for the blind. I mean, it might be not a very high-paying job, but I think it's a middle-level job that people can make a living on. For people that really want to have their own careers in different ways, then like, it's up to them. If they want to, just have some computer skills, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there are also recently, I just talked to a blind guy who worked with me on getting JAWS and Sona, this music thing. Is it called Sona?
Sona.
Cat Talk or something like that.
Cakewalk?
Yeah, stuff from Dancing Dots with proper scripts and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has a music studio and he wanted to be able to arrange his music by himself with a lot of tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he got involved in that and I helped him a little bit with JAWS and he's really happy with it.
Hmm.
So that is also another profession too, music arrangement.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Great.
Am I talking too much here?
Not at all. Not at all. It's fascinating.
I'm just going with what I can think of moment and
but
just sharing with you guys.
You came to visit us though, so what kind of questions do you have of us?
Oh, well, I would like to know about your, products, your research work, and I also would like to know more about how you coordinate things or manage things on certain research projects, on new developments.
Okay.
Because, there are certain things that you got resources in-house, you can do on your own, but there are certain things that you might need to coordinate with other people.
Exactly.
I mean, for example, the Bookport, was it easy to talk to a company that made, I heard it, they already made some kind of product before that.
Yeah, the Roadrunner.
Right. Was it easy or difficult to talk to them to get it customized for the blind and things like that?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. I think software development is something we can do much more easier than hardware development.
That's exactly the case.
Because
yeah.
hardware development is something, you know, you got to really have good prototype and mm-hmm. and all that stuff, and then make it really work, not staying as a prototype and as a research thing. You know, it has to be a product eventually.
Oh yeah.
Right. So well, maybe you can share with me some of that.
Well, in the case of the Bookport and the Roadrunner, I was actually lucky enough to be a beta tester before the Roadrunner came out, so I was familiar with this company mm-hmm. Back from years ago. In fact, you know the guy that does the text-to-speech, the double talk speech
yes,
synthesizer?
Randy.
Yeah, Randy Carlstrom.
Yep.
He was involved in the Roadrunner production.
Okay.
So,
but it's not a product from RC System, right?
It was somebody else. It was actually three of them got together and uh-huh. It was a company called TBGR. It stood for Two Bald Guys and Randy.
What? Are you serious about this?
I'm serious. Steve and Skip were the bald guys, and then there was Randy. And
TBGR.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So I was lucky enough to be able to give them some input on it as it was being developed, and so I had kind of a connection with that company from the start, and we actually got a modified version of the Roadrunner mm-hmm. to distribute here. It wasn't modified much with the firmware. Mm-hmm. It was more or less a case thing to make the colors of the numbers brighter and mm-hmm. you know, bigger.
Right.
So after some issues came up with the Roadrunner, and when it, you know, it came time to design a better product, mm-hmm. you know, I just talked with the Steve part of the three guys, mm-hmm. and we worked out a contract where we used his design. He had designed the Book Courier. We used his hardware design, and mm-hmm. then contracted with him to do our firmware, do firmware to our specifications, because we had a totally different user interface and a lot of different functionality that we saw as a dream for this kind of product. And, you know, this Braille input was part of that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And, we didn't make the note-taking part of this until just here in the last couple of months, but mm-hmm. we knew from the very beginning that that's what we wanted to do. It just, mm-hmm. you know, some of this stuff you have to schedule out because it's a little bit complex. So we kind of took advantage of, you know, the base firmware, the kind of kernel of the system, and then built firmware to our specifications around that, which is what the Bookport is.
So the hardware came from that company over there.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing really that's different hardware-wise about the Courier and the Port is the keyboard. Is different. You know, we wanted uniform keys so that we could do Braille input on
it. But the Roadrunner, now the Roadrunner is really gone, right? I mean, people are not using that, right?
Well,
I remember seeing once, but it was different. It doesn't look like the Bookport.
It was a little smaller, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it only had like 3 megs of RAM, and every time you uploaded to it, you had to erase everything you had in there, so...
Okay.
It was a neat idea at the time, but you know that's been 10 years ago now.
Right.
So
okay,
a lot's come along since then.
And you mentioned Courier,
Book Courier.
What is that then?
Was
that the regular commercialized version of Bookport?
Yeah, that was the device that Steve designed, and we used that hardware. You know, it's the same case and everything, same guts to it, but just the software that's running on it is different.
Oh, actually, it looks the same then, the Courier and the Bookport.
Yep, except the keys are a little different.
I
think there's one in that drawer right there. I'll show that to you, that left-hand drawer.
So you are pretty much exclusive, distributors of the Bookport then, like working with this company. And if it's going to be sold, it's going to be sold through APH, basically.
Exactly.
But as far as couriers, the companies over there, they can sell whatever they want.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it being used? I mean, is it being sold, the courier?
It sure is. Yeah, his primary market, really, he had aimed at the learning disabled market, but it works fine for a blind person as well.
Oh,
it works fine.
Okay.
Did you find it wrong?
Because for sighted people, you know, I mean, I was amazed going through this computer complex in Thailand, and I'm sure it's available here too.
The which?
You know, like the development from this flash stick, or what you call drum drive. In Thailand, we call drum drive. I don't know
how you spell it.
But you call this flash stick over here, or
flash card, compact flash.
Flash card.
Yeah.
It is the thing that sticks into USB port.
Okay. Yeah. Thumb drive is what we call it.
Thumb. Yeah. Thumb. You mean the thumb? The finger. The thumb.
Right.
You mean? Okay. Thumb drive. All right.
Yeah, there's a book courier right there. You can see that it looks just pretty much like a...
Oh, okay.
Except you notice the keys are a little different.
Right, I see. Okay, now, with the thumb drive, you know, being popular with more memories and stuff, I've heard of, you know, drum drives with different features, like, you know, you can load music into that and you can play with it, sort of like an MP3 player in the drum drive.
Yeah.
And even recording too.
Yeah.
Right, so it got pretty similar to the bookboard, but I think it is not as accessible.
Right,
is
that's
true.
That is true.
Like it doesn't really tell you exactly where you are going or how to forward and backward and stuff like that.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, the iPod Shuffle, this new memory-based iPod, from what I understand, it actually doesn't have any kind of screen on it or anything, so it's really just as accessible for a blind person as it is for a sighted person. It's just got controls on it to go from song to song or to shuffle the songs or what have you.
The iPod.
Well, the iPod Shuffle, which is a, you know, the regular iPod is a hard drive-based MP3 player.
Okay.
But this iPod Shuffle is a memory-based one. I think there's a 512 gigabyte, megabyte, and a 1 gigabyte version of it. And it's very much like that, like a thumb drive. You can store files on it, or you can use it to be an MP3 player as well. And they coordinate it with software. You know, their iTunes software has some features where it'll automatically synchronize your shuffle with, you know, whatever playlist you want, like your most recent stuff or what have you. So there's that, and I need to get hold of one of those, but it seems like that would be completely accessible since there's no display on it anyway.
You have to evaluate that.
Yeah.
So that might be pretty close to the bookport that you have then.
except that it won't read text files. You know,
it's just
music. Right. Okay. Just audio.
I won't read the file names either.
And the chip inside the bookport is still that Randy Carlson double talk.
Yeah,
chip,
it is. It sure is.
You know,
he's been around a while, huh?
You know, I thought when the screen readers went into sound cards, you know, that the need for the hardware speech synthesizer would go down. And I think it did. I mean, a lot of other speech synthesizers sort of drop off the picture. But I keep hearing this double talk voice.
Shows up everywhere.
In Enabling Technologies Braille printers.
Yeah,
I'm sure
it
He got his money from that too.
Well, and I believe it's D-Ball who makes the ATM, the accessible ATM machines here, has a big contract with him to put the double talk speech in the money machines.
Right. So he got his niche over there on this embedded speech, you know,
he
synthesis
sure did.
System. It must have been nice and small chip.
It is. Low power.
Right.
Yeah, and
now you don't get involved into getting that chip into the bookport, do you? I mean, the bookport comes to you from that company with double top chip already ready for you?
As a matter of fact, we get it completely packaged and everything. We send them what we want to put on the book port and on the CD, and then the contents, of course, of the cassette. And then he does all the manufacturing and packaging and everything, and we just get boxes of them here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. See, that, you know, that kind of cooperation is something that I am trying to get going more in Thailand. Because we do the research work. We get college people or college students doing different hardware things, and they have good ideas, and they come up with nice job. But, you know, they would go and get whatever parts available from electronic stores, and it might not look appealing. It might be too big. You know, the buttons may not be that nice to touch or whatever, you know. But to really make it more appealing and to be a good product, when I get to companies now, the companies might say, yeah, I can do this for you, but I have to look at my, you know, what do you call that, a profit, in a balance of breaking it even or whatever.
Sure.
So they would say, well, you have to make sure you order 10,000 of these.
Well,
or
we have the
That's
exact
crazy.
Same problem
I said
here.
To them, you know, blind people, we don't have that much demand for it, but I want something nice.
It's
to be for the blind, and I want to be able to, you know, get to the customer. So
that's the
know.
Most common problem we have at APH,
yeah,
too.
So
when
do
we
you,
make
what do you do to take care of it?
Unfortunately, there's not much you can do. You have to find a manufacturer that's willing to manufacture something for you, but it ends up costing more than it should. You know, if we could make these book ports by the millions, they'd be, you know, $99.
But
there's just not that many blind people here either.
That's right.
Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Or fortunately, whatever.
But at least you could work something out for them to make a smaller quantity, right? I mean...
Yeah. But it ends up costing the end user more than it could if we were making millions.
Yeah. So, you know, these companies that are manufacturing things, well, that can, discussion can even go over with other products too.
It does.
Any
yeah.
hardware products. I mean, are these companies that are producing things for APH small companies, you know, like one man, two man people that just don't mind just cranking out a good production of hardwares? Or it's really a big manufacturers that have, you know, one of your product as one of the thing that they do. And
we have both, actually. You know those big four-track, they used to be GE, now they're Thompson recorders.
Uh-huh.
We're just one customer of that company. In fact, you know, we get a whole year or 2 years worth on a half a day production run for them.
They spend half a day to make.
Isn't that amazing?
To make all the recorders for you.
Right.
Yeah.
One half a day a year.
Yeah, for 2 years even.
For 2 years.
Yeah. So we're peanuts to them. They could care less if we do it or not. You know.
Yeah. Are these the four track recorders that given to the blind through Library of Congress or is different?
No, it's different.
The traditional ones that we saw.
Yeah, I think Rob's got one in his office there to show you.
But what about slates? Even I mean,
we make slates here.
Oh, you make slates here?
We do. In fact, you'll see in the tour that you're going to take.
So you have the mold and you make the slates here.
We do.
Okay.
I mean, there's other slates, of course. We don't make them all.
Right.
I think we make a nickel one and an aluminum one.
Yeah, I still like the APH slates.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but that's not what we sell, but that's like it. Remember those?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
I remember now.
Right.
It is, the Library of Congress will not record, but these will record.
Right.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
And it seems to be a little bit stronger than Library of Congress ones, too.
Yeah.
It is. Well,
but... Okay, this is the time that they spend half of the day to make for you.
Exactly. Yeah. But then we also have other companies that you know, are smaller, where they're interested. They'll work for us. It's not cheap, which, you know, is one reason the products are, like I said, are higher than what they should be for the commercial equivalent of it.
But they do other things. I mean, their companies have other things that they do.
Sure.
Even the company that makes book ports for you guys, they make book, you know, they make products for other things of their own.
Yeah.
Okay. I see.
I'm trying to think of an example of some companies that we do some hardware with. Now, I will tell you, we do a lot of hardware, a lot of manufacturing here. Like I told you, we made the slate.
Uh-huh.
We make a lot of different educational kits back here. We have a model maker and carpenters, and
we have some production stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. We don't have the capabilities to mass produce circuit boards or anything like that yet. We might someday.
Uh-huh.
So we generally will contract that kind of stuff to a small engineering firm or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I know Tristan, one of the project leaders that's working with physical fitness products, has been working on a ball that emits sound, you know, it runs off of batteries, and she's found a manufacturer, or no, she's in looking for a manufacturer right now. She's taking bids on someone to produce this design she has.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll find a company that, you know, is already making a product, and we can say, well, look, can you make some modifications for this if we agree to buy X number of them per year?
20 of them a year.
Then they agree.
They wouldn't agree on 20.
Yeah.
Right. So, it runs all the way up and down the scale. We just try to work out whatever we can.
But you have to contact them. You have to talk to them, discuss with them on what you want, and just doing the talking, dealing and wheeling, and try to compromise until it works out. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
And now, do you do that, or is the director of research does that for you?
Each of the project leaders does that for their own products, and if they need some help from the director of research or the president of the company or the CFO or whatever, you know, they will get involved.
Okay, so there's a project leader for different products.
Well, for each different areas of
different
research.
Areas. Okay.
Like I'm the technology one, and we have a braille one and a low vision, tactile graphics one. They're doing some really interesting work.
So are you, so the book port is under your area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. And sometimes I get frustrated. I see a nice device developed in Thailand as prototype, or even research institutes in Thailand. The researchers would do something nice, but it doesn't get past the research stage. It doesn't get to that production stage.
It's tough to get it manufactured. Those low quantities, again, are what's killing us.
A lot of that goes on here, too.
Definitely.
Sometimes I even thought, maybe I'll just start a small, production shop or something, just hire a couple of, technicians and or whatever, and just train them a little bit.
Yeah.
And do it on my own.
The bad part is you have to pay them,
though. Yeah, right. But the thing is, sometimes it's just simple design,
Yeah.
And just look for the right parts and assemble it, and it's done. Now, talk about design, when you, for hardware, or for software, I think more for the hardware. You mean like just something written on papers, like specifications of what you want? Is that what you mean by the design?
Yeah.
Or more than that?
Well, it's, the more you can do, the easier it is for the person to manufacture it for you.
I'm back.
Hey, okay. Must be tour time.
We're getting close. We're supposed to be together at 10, so.
Okay. This is Ralph Bartley that just walked in. We're doing a podcast, Ralph, of the visit here. And Ralph is the director of research, and he's going to All right, I guess a company on the tour, or just
we're going to. We've made arrangements with Roberta Williams to provide our guest a tour of APH. That way, he'll get a really good, informative tour, better than the one that if I had done the tour.
Okay, well, this will do it for Blind Cool Tech number 22. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.